Profanity has always been a vibrant, really a deliciously vibrant part of our lexicon and an integral part of being human. We know why languages have, we know that languages have terms of endearment, of greeting, of ritual, but why do all languages have collections of words that are quote unquote bad? Language evolves with time, and so does what we consider profane or unspeakable. In his new book, Nine Nasty Words, John McWhirter examines profanity, explored from every angle, historical, sociological, political, and linguistic. John McWhirter teaches linguistics, American studies, and music history at Columbia University. He's a contributing editor at The Atlantic and host of Slate's Lexicon Valley podcast. The new book is Nine Nasty Words, English in the Gutter, Then, Now, and Forever. And it's a great pleasure to welcome John McWhirter back to the program. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. It's very nice to have you here. Thank you very much. I enjoy your work, and I thank you for being here talking about this subject. What led you to it? What led you to want to talk about these nasty words?
Well, I think that everybody's interested in language, but people seem to have a particular interest in profanity. And because profanity is profanity, it tends to have interesting history. A lot of these words meant something very different when they began than what they mean now. And just to chart that evolution and to see in general what a society considers profane at different eras in time, I thought would make for an interesting presentation, and I wanted it to be fun. It's actually a book where I was trying to laugh. It's a book with a smile. I wanted people to see that you can get some stealth linguistic lessons in while actually having a good time. So that was my intention.
Stealth linguistic lessons. I love that. Okay, so it takes you three paragraphs in the book to get to George Carlin's Seven Dirty Words You Can't Say on Television. And that's what a lot of us know about profanity and dirty words, and sort of that's our reference point when we think about it.
Yeah, and I wanted to start from there and then kind of revise it, partly because what he didn't mention is what we often think of as slurs. But today, slurs like the N-word are what any anthropologist would recognize as profanity. And so that list has to be more than seven. And yeah, you have to trim his list somewhat because, you know, fashions in profanity change. But yeah, the question is, what's going on with those words? Why did they become profane? He talked about the power that we lend to them. Well, why? How did that evolve? Because all of those words started out not having that kind of power. And yet here we are today.
So how do fashions in profanity change? Give us an example of that.
Well, a medieval Anglophone thought of it as profane to take the Lord's name in vain. That's where you get the idea that, oh, my God, is wrong to say, that you get your mouth washed out with soap for saying hell. But notice I can say those two words here. After about the Reformation, 1400s, what's profane is things having to do with the body, things that come out of the body, et cetera. And those are the classic four-letter words that we really do think of as bad words now. And then, really, only over about the past few decades, a new category of profanity has arisen where what we used to just think of as slurs are now not just slurs, but they are taboo in general society. They are our new profanity. So you go from damn through to the N-word and similar words, and it's an interesting progression.
So let us talk. I was fascinated. You start off with this, and that is the word hell. And you say it's actually an illogical swear word. How so?
In that if you say something like, you know, what the hell is that? What is the hell word? Like if you were going to figure out parsing it, like what's the part of speech? What does it lend to the sentence in terms of meaning? What the hell? We're so used to hearing it, but it really isn't something that makes any grammatical sense. And that's because profanity ends up being generated from the right side of the brain. And what it really is an eruption. It's a gesture. It's a middle finger stuck up. And that doesn't need to be grammatical. And that's why you can even say something like, what the F? And you think to yourself, if you know what F is and what F is supposed to mean, how does it contribute to the meaning of that sentence? It doesn't make any logical sense. It's because it's a gesture that used to be a word.
You are here to point out that that F word has 15 distinct meanings.
It does, because to really speak English is to be able to use it in those, you know, get the F off of me, you know, F that, and so on and so on. It really is a very articulate piece of linguistic material if you know how to use all of it. Languages tend to have at least one curse word that really permeates the language in that way. And for English, it happens to be that F word.
Yeah. And so why is this word so powerful? Why is that the mother of the curse words, if you will?
Well, that one, it used to be. I think these days the two mothers of curse words are the N-word and the word that begins with C that refers to women. But it used to be that that one was considered the most powerful. And it was because the major pox was upon things having to do with the body. Yeah. And that one was considered particularly difficult because, you know, it involves, you know, sexual intercourse. It has a sound. That was also part of it. Curse words in English tend to be one syllable, and ideally they begin and or end with a crisp consonant. And F-U-C-K is, you know, a perfect example of that. And so, yeah, it was one that really was considered sacred and hideous and unutterable, to the point that, say, 100 years ago, a sophisticated New York City publishing editor, Maxwell Perkins, couldn't bring himself to say the word even when he needed to. He would sit in his office and write it on his desk calendar and show the person if that's what he wanted to refer to. And somebody like Ernest Hemingway couldn't put it in his novels about men drinking and fighting and having sex. It was just considered a taboo word. That, of course, has changed considerably. But notice that what I'm mentioning now sounds like the way we handle the N-word.
Right. It's just interesting to me because, and frequency really has nothing to do with it. The fact that the average American, pandemic aside, in the first hour of the day from the time they leave their house to the time they arrive at work and spend a few hours at the desk, how many times have they heard the F word? That doesn't seem to limit its shock value, if you will.
Well, in a way, though, I might say that it does, because I don't think of that word as really profane anymore. I think of it in modern usage among most Americans, not all, but most Americans under a certain age. But that age, I would say now, is about 70.
Yeah.
That word is salty. It's a salty word. For example, I'm a pretty buttoned up person, the kind of person who people have a hard time imagining doing randy things. And yet I use the F word all the time, including around my children. And it's not to create an effect. It's because the word has just lost its power. There are other words that I don't use around my children or don't use at all. One of them would be that word beginning with C.
Yeah.
That's taboo to me, but not the word that we're talking about here.
All right. Two things. Once my mother said to me, she said, your sister-in-law came in and she said that she was so mad at her mother, she called her the C word. And I don't know what she meant. I think she meant crazy. I love that to this day. Two, when it comes to the frequency and the use, I agree with you exactly what you said. So why can't you and I say that word on the radio right now?
It's frankly kind of stupid. I mean, these mores and rules have a way of lagging behind reality. And there are people who would rather not hear the word at all in a public setting. But I think we both know that if we could utter that word, the world would keep spinning and the people who were made uncomfortable would get used to it or they'd listen to something else. And the fact that we have to express ourselves here in a way that we immediately wouldn't as soon as the microphones went off if we were in the same room is an artifice. Then again, there is artifice in any society, but yes, it's an artifice. And I personally, if I were running my own radio network, or, you know, if I were running things at the FCC, I would relax these things. And in my own podcast, Lexicon Valley, I curse like a sailor. Or I did for the first few years and then started pulling back because I realized I had a child listenership. And even I felt a little funny using some of those words so often, knowing that 10-year-olds were listening.
Yeah.
But when it was just grown-ups, I just talked like a normal person. And I thought, I'm glad I can do this. And the FCC can't fix it.
So because of the FCC, I have I'd say it's the size of a gift box that you'd put a mug in. It's a gray box, and it has a big red button on the top, and it's our dump button. So when anything happens, we have a 7-second delay. I push it, and then the listener doesn't hear that. Do you imagine ever a time where that particular device will not be necessary?
No, I think that we will always, if we're anything recognizable as the current America, there will always be profanity. The question is just what's profane. So once you don't have to press that button because somebody uses a particular word for excrement, you're going to have that button in case somebody uses a slur, for example, in a way that would make people uncomfortable. And then once that is no longer considered as important because those words either disappear or they lose their power, there will be, and I'm not a sci-fi person, so I'm not great at imagining, but I can assume that there will be something else that occupies that zone of being transgressive and taboo.
So I have so many questions for you, and I wish I didn't have a dumb button, but here we go. So one is, during COVID, I was watching, like a lot of people, been watching a lot of television. I've been watching a lot of old television, and I've been watching a lot of new television. And when I say, in this particular case, I'm going to say, I'm talking about broadcast television, network broadcast television. One of the things that I've noticed is if you look back to the 70s, like I've been watching match game, the game show from the 70s. And the words that were used there, it is unbelievable. I mean, the N word is used. It's just astounding, and really, you can't believe it. And my mouth drops open every time it happens. And other slurs that come fairly regularly on that program. So there is that, and I think, oh, okay, well, good. You know, we don't have that in our everyday. That's good. Then, when I watch like current day television, like the word for penis that starts with a D, that's regularly used on broadcast television now. Douche is regularly used on television now. These are all things that were not used to be used. So where did that relaxation come from? And as you say, the ebb and flow that suddenly, like, is there a memo written that says, oh, yeah, you can use this now at 8 o'clock?
I think you're giving a beautiful, I need to start watching those old game shows because they must be a valuable look at how language was used, not in, say, 1940, but 1973, which, was a while ago now. But, yeah, you are seeing the transition from profanity being about the body to profanity being about slurs. And so back in that era, especially if you were referring to the word rather than hurling it, although sometimes you could hurl it, the slur kind of word, for example, the N word, not to mention other slur sorts of words, that was something that, people were allowed to do. Nevertheless, on those shows, nobody was ever going to say F-U-C-K. It was unthinkable. Right. Even as late as, here's a random example. I remember there was an episode of Roseanne, and that show straddled 1990. So the episode's probably 1990 or 91. They couldn't say, I think I can say this on the air, or maybe you'll beep it, fart. They have a whole episode about that having happened, but they can't say it. And this is Roseanne, which was a pretty salty show. That would be unthinkable now, because even as late as 1990, there was a lag in terms of how actual people spoke. But now we've gotten to the point where nobody has, would hesitate to use that word or the one you're talking about referring to penis on television. It's just those words are no longer genuinely profane. They're salty, as opposed to the slurs, which are treated the way those quote-unquote blue words were back in the day.
I'm glad you made the point early on of talking about how the smile you want this book to have, because it certainly does have that. It is great fun and enjoyable to read. The new book is 9 Nasty Words, English in the Gutter, Then, Now, and Forever. It is published by Avery. John McWherter, I thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on our airwaves.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book. I'm not bleeping myself. I accidentally turned my mic off. 9 Nasty Words, English in the Gutter. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.